Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Hello, hello. This is Lorna Owens, and welcome to Footprints Foundation Radio. We are that arm of Footprints Foundation, and Footprints Foundation, what we do, we work around the world to reduce maternal and infant mortality. And let me tell you some of the countries we work in. We work in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. We work in Jamaica. We also are in Ethiopia. And we're also in Florida City, right here in Florida City, which is, you know, just a little ways from where we are. And that's where we do some of our work in that area. Moms are, you know, not breastfeeding as much as we would want them to for the health of their babies. And so we're going to be working with them. Also want to say hello to all people around the world listening to us, and certainly in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Jamaica, and also in Somaliland. This is a fabulous day for us because we have come to the end of all the people that you must hear for a literary jazz brunch. And last but certainly not least is Mary Spiho, and she is one of our final authors that we're going to be talking to. And I'm glad, Mary, are you there? I believe you are. We're glad to have you. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Lorna. I'm very, very excited to be here. Delighted to be here.
Okay. You sound a little distant. So if by chance you have us, for example, on speaker, then do put us on just regular call, because you sound a little distant for us. It's clear. It just sounds distant.
Oh, okay.
All right. So Mary Spiho, her new book that came out this month is called It Is Not Rocket Science. And we are going to be talking to her about it. But since we have time, we are going to just stretch out a bit and have her tell you most of the story herself, except I can tell you that she is a rocket scientist for real. Okay. She's a dream maker. She's been spoken of in the same breath as Oprah Winfrey, after all being named one of the 100 history makers in the USA. Her patent, which she holds, changed the way we see movies, and we'll talk to her about it. And for her, math and science is certainly a big thing. So I just want to welcome you, and let me just silence what's going on here in the background. You know, Mary, you have to tell me about Apple is an interesting thing. I silence my phone, obviously, because we're going to be on. But what you heard in the background was my iPad. So I guess technology just takes over everything. But let's start with you. You were born in the United States, but of Ghanaian parents. Let's start the conversation there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so my parents are from Ghana. I was born in New York. We actually went back to Ghana when I was a baby, when I was young. And so, you know, I grew up in Ghana and basically went to school in Ghana. I went to primary school there, secondary school, and then after, you know, I guess what would be the equivalent of high school, I came back to the U.S. on my own at 16.
So let me pause there, because during your conversations, we're going to have what we call pauses, right? Because every time you hit something that seems remarkable or different, we're certainly going to ask you to just clarify a little bit. You came back at 16 without your parents. Your parents stayed in Ghana and you came here?
I did. I came back on my own. I begged them to let me come back to America, and so they let me. And that's, you know, and I think what's remarkable about that is from as far back as I can remember, my parents have really been very supportive of our judgment. That's one of the ways that I think today has allowed all of us to be able to make a lot of big, bold steps. Because they always trusted our judgment. And yes, it was a very difficult thing to do. You know, now that I have my own, you know, child, I can't even imagine a teen, but that's, you know, that's what I did.
Okay, and when you land here, because usually a lot of times we have aunties or other extended family in country that even though we come alone, somebody meets us at the airport, takes us in, and life revolves normally because we have someone, you know, that we're coming to. Was that your experience?
Yes. That was my experience. My parents had, when they were in Syracuse, they met this wonderful couple, the Codys, that was their name. It was Jack and Marilyn Cody. And they were my my godparents. And so they lived in South Carolina. And that was also another experience living with them because I did not, you know, realize it was a whole thing to do with race. But, yeah, so they lived in South Carolina. So they when I came back, I went to live with them. They were the most amazing couple ever, but their neighbors, you know, they didn't want me there, you know, and at that time I didn't understand. I was like, what's going on? And they tried to shield me from all of that, but later on I found out I actually went to a church there in their neighborhood, and I was escorted out of the church. I was told to go to the black church on the other, you know, side of town. They were so furious because, you know, my godparents were both, you know, Caucasian, and they had never experienced any of this. So they were very, very surprised by all of these things that, you know, I ended up going through. But, you know, that was definitely a big culture shock to me. But I came to live with my godparents.
All right, so, you know, I mean, obviously that part of the story is a shock, and the fact that we're not going to go in it today is just because of time, but I certainly would certainly want to hear some of that at the Literary Jazz Brunch, because Mary is going to be one of the many authors at our Literary Jazz Brunch, March 28th, right here at the Ritz-Carlton in Coconut Grove, and it starts at 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. There comes a time, Mary, however, when you decide to come to New York, to go back to New York, and you part of that, I believe, was influenced by this nostalgia or this understanding you have of a movie. What is the name of the movie that influenced that, and how did it play out in your getting to New York?
Yeah, so before coming to America, you know, I would say I did my research. I watched this movie called Coming to America, which had Eddie Murphy, you know, as an African prince who comes to the U.S. and goes to Queens, New York, in search of his bride. So this book basically informed my philosophy on what America was all about. So I felt like, you know, I have to go to New York. I have to go after, you know, the Big Apple. So a day after graduation, I left. You know, I took the midnight train and I got to New York City in the day and, you know, found my way to Brooklyn. I ended up living in New Lux, which was the last stop on the number 3 train, which is where I lived until I went in the Air Force. I, you know, like Prince Hakeem, you know, I know he worked at McDowell's or whatever, but I went up to McDonald's. As I was coming up, you know, the train from the train station, I see this huge McDonald's on Fulton Street, and I said, oh, my God, that's got to be my sign. You know, so I ended up getting a job there.
Okay. But you had graduated from college then. Is that what it is?
No, I had graduated from high school. After high school, I went to New York, and I got a job at – so by this time I'm 17 years old. I got a job at McDonald's, and to me, that was my first job ever. So it was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I have a job. I can't believe they're going to pay me money, you know, to do this thing that I'm about to do. Because also growing up in Ghana, and I don't know if it's still the same way today, but I think unlike, you know, the U.S., a lot of places you just don't have that many opportunities to work when you're young, right?
Right.
You know, the first job that you get is what's called a national service, where maybe you go teach or do some sort of thing. But to be able to just go into McDonald's and get a job, that to me was just completely unheard of. I was living the dream, you know. It's like
working at McDonald's, yeah?
Working at McDonald's. I saw it in the movie, and now I'm living the dream.
Right. But at some point, something must have happened and said, listen, you need to get your butt to college. And how did that play out? And what did you, when you did decide to go to college, what did you study?
I mean, working at McDonald's was great. I went from the floor to being on fries. I didn't exactly like, you know, the feeling of all that hot exploding oil, what have you. So when I became a cashier, I realized that, you know, I wasn't the best cashier, and I wanted to do something different. I heard a commercial for the Army. It talked about doing more with your life than most people do, and, you know, doing more by 5 a.m. than most people do with their lives. So I said, you know what, let me go
right.
check this thing out. But anyway, I ended up joining the Air Force. And so when I went in the Air Force, I learned about technology. I really enjoyed everything that I was doing. I was a satellite technician in the Air Force. And I met this engineer who, you know, I had fixed one of our communications terminals. And he said to me, you should really look into going to college to become an engineer. Up until that point, I didn't know any engineers personally. I didn't even know engineering existed, you know, as a discipline. Like, you know, I thought that was the kind of stuff for those other people. It wasn't even part of my realm of knowing. You know, I hadn't been exposed
right.
to it. So I started looking into it. I mean, I've always enjoyed math. I've always been, you know, good at math. And so I applied for a scholarship, and that year for all of the U.S. forces in Europe, there was one scholarship for someone to go back to school, and I, you know, applied for that scholarship. It was a merit-based scholarship, and I got that scholarship, and that's how I went back to college, and I went to Syracuse, and that's where I was born. That's where my dad went, and so I went back to Syracuse University and got my degree in electrical engineering.
Well, and one presupposes that in your class, males, females, was it a predominantly male-dominated field, the whole electrical engineering field?
It was. It was very, when we started out, we had, you know, I think we had, in my class, in electrical engineering, we had a handful of, you know, of girls in there. By the time we graduated, I was the only one, and I graduated number one in my class. So it was very male dominated. But what's interesting is Syracuse has a very long tradition of, you know, excellence in electrical engineering, because at my lab station that I used was also used by Eileen Collins, who was the space shuttle, you know, commander, the first female space shuttle commander. So I had Eileen pushing. I also had my dean of engineering, who was an African-American woman, who took me under her wings. Without her, honestly, I wouldn't have made it in engineering. I've always been a child of two worlds. I loved psychology and people, and then I also love, you know, technology. So I wanted to go into psychology because I want to be a relationships counselor. And when I first got there, because I had not been exposed to coding and all of that stuff, initially was very, very difficult for me. It was embarrassing more than anything else. And I think the reason a lot of people drop out, it's not because they don't have the capacity to do it, but, you know, sometimes they're embarrassed, right? I didn't want people to know that I didn't know how to move a file from A to B, or that I had never coded or seen a computer, you know, unlike some of these people that have been doing it for their whole lives. And so when I went to talk to her, she helped me, you know, learn those basics that I had not been exposed to. And then once I got a grasp of those basics, you know, I went on to graduate at the top of the class.
Hold that thought, Mary. And, you know, that is certainly something we want to pass on to our younger people, that we're trying to say excellence is certainly a part of the process, and the fact that never giving up is a part of the process, never quitting, and not thinking you're stupid, because if you've never been exposed, for example, you had not, I understand, had not seen a colored television or a computer until the age of 16. So your frame of reference and your skill set would have been influenced just by exposure.
Exposure, that's it, yeah. Exposure, absolutely. And that's why I am such an evangelist for exposing people to other possibilities, you know, possibilities in technology. And my career hasn't been, you know, traditional in terms of, yes, I am an engineer, but I've also been a matchmaker, you know, even in college.
Yeah.
While they paid for my coursework, I had to pay for my own housing and, you know, everything else. And so I got a job as a matchmaker. And then I also had another job as a, you know, rocket scientist. So I was doing orbital simulation by day, and I was working as a matchmaker by night.
This is too much. This is like a whole day of speaking to Mary Steele, and that's who we're speaking with. Her book is called It's Not Rocket Science, and you're going to be seeing her and speaking with her and hearing her at our literary jazz brunch coming up March 28th at the Ritz-Carlton in Coconut Grove. You got to get your tickets, because I keep telling you all, and you don't believe me, if you come the day off, it's going to be $190. We love the more money, but, you know, right now it's $130. So we do need for you to get your tickets. And we don't want everybody to be purchasing their tickets the day off, because we want to be so ready for you. We have other authors in. We have Ellen Brazier. Her book is called And So It Is Written. Patricia Harmon, The Reluctant Midwife. Lisa Green, On Your Case. Roseanne Small-Morgan, Situation Zane, Autism, Who Knew It? And performing live for us. Actually, I just spoke with her, and she's making sure all the sound and everything at the Ritz-Carlton is proper, is Roxana Ahmed. She is a Sony recording artist from Argentina. Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. And when you come, I have a big surprise, but I can't keep surprises, so I'm going to tell you. Sony is going to be putting together like a music thing for you, a music set, a music giveaway for you, and it's only for our event. Nobody else will have those selections. So this is huge. We'll have amazing raffle items. We'll have Desert Sage candles on sale. And it's the brunch is beyond spectacular. I looked at it again last week, and it's a phenomenal brunch. You'll have wine. It's very luxury, lots of luxury. And people have often asked whether men can come. Yes, and they're buying the tickets to come. Men can come, and we want young ones to come, because they must hear Mary's story. Mary, you also did a master's, because we're going to talk about you're getting a master's, and then you're working for Boeing, and then launching rockets and all like that, because this is one woman. She's an entrepreneur, a scientist, a dream maker, history maker, you name it. Did I lose you, Mary?
You're not.
So I know that you also went back to school and you did a master's degree. And what was that in?
My master's was in electrical engineering and computer science. After that, I went to work. I worked for a company called Panopsat. It's now called Intelsat. And then I went over to Boeing. At Boeing, I got the chance to work with the team. I was one of three engineers that they brought in. We grew to over 200, but to focus on a project called Digital Cinema, which is how, you know, my first few patents came about, which is for the delivery of movies over satellite. The first movie that we released was Star Wars Episode II, which
wow.
We sent to 30,000 theaters globally. And today, it's the digital distribution of movies to theaters. So we pioneered that, we commercialized that, and we changed the industry in terms of the way movies are delivered.
We went over to Boeing, but it's how does one just go over to Boeing? Did Boeing come get you? Did you see an advertising in the paper? I mean, how does one get from where you were to just going over to Boeing? Because you make it sound so easy, because for you, you know, maybe in your mind it's like, oh, I just went over to Boeing. But people are like, how the heck did she get to Boeing? And
you
they're
know,
like,
and
the
honestly,
Boeing? Yeah, the Boeing. And then how did she get to Boeing?
Yeah, and that's the power of of having a tech degree too, because even once I graduated with my degree in technology, even with my undergraduate degree, I had so many job offers And then, you know, I went to, you know, work specifically for PanamSat because I love the philosophy of the founder of PanamSat. While I was there, I got approached by a recruiter. You know, I mean, I throw myself into everything that I do. I'm led by passion, right? So I, even though I am an engineer, I found projects that I loved. And so, you know, the word that's out there that, you know, you're willing to go the distance, you know, you have a level of excellence and whatnot. So I got approached by Boeing, by a recruiter for Boeing, and they talked to me about that project and other projects, and, you know, and that's how I went over to Boeing. And, you know, I got quite a bit of, I got a, you know, huge financial incentive, but that's, you know, not the only reason why I went to Boeing. But, you know, I just saw a post recently. It talked about the fact that the number of people the NFL hires a year compared to the millions of jobs that are just available with technology and technology entrepreneurship. And that's why I'm such a big evangelist about it, because the gates are wide open. You know, today, if you want to start a tech business, if you want to get into technology, you don't even have to have a tech background or so many opportunities, and that's what my book is about, you know. That's why it's called It's Not Rocket Science, because a lot of times traveling, people say, well, you know, you've started two game-changing technology companies. You've changed, you know, the movie industry. You've done this, or that. Worked for Microsoft, Coca-Cola, Toyota, you know. It's because you're a rocket scientist. And I'm like, no, it's not rocket science. And so I have actionable steps in here. I have, you know, information in here on how I did it. I share my own personal story, and then also how you can do it as well.
That is Mary Spiegel. Her book is called It Is Not Rocket Science, and one of the things she talks about it in it is the whole issue of habit and the whole issue of being able to break through the limiting signs. One of the things I like about your book, and I have it here in my hand, is that it tells you the perseverance thing, but what a lot of people can't make the leap is the how-to. And you have broken it down in your book, telling us, literally, it's not rocket science. Here's step one. Here's step two. Why did you do it like that?
Because that's how I learned, right? For example, if you had said to me that you're going to be an engineer, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, I would have said no. That's, you know, it would have been outside the realm of possibility for me. But having gone through the steps that I went through, I realized, oh, my God, I can do this. So it's the same thing. Having gone through the process of launching these companies, of getting, you know, how do you get a contract with someone like a Microsoft Xbox or Coca-Cola or this or that? This is the process. This is the game plan that I use and I continue to use. That's why I broke it down into the steps, so that anyone reading the book can look at it and say, you know what, I'm going to set some sort of audacious goal for myself, and this is how I'm going to achieve it. So this is about being audacious. It's about making an impact. It's about making your mark and the steps for achieving it. And I share not just my story, but I went to great lengths to interview a lot of people, including Oprah Winfrey's dad. What was different about Oprah growing up, and what could Oprah's dad share with other people? I also talked to Dr. Lewis, who was the only guy who taught both Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg. What did he see that was different about the young Bill and Mark and all of that? And I share a lot of these and what we can take, you know, back from it. I even went to China to interview the president and CEO of Tencent. Tencent has $110 billion valuation. How did they get there? What did they do differently?
Right.
You know, so all of that stuff I share in the book.
And the thing about it, why I do believe you need to come here, Mary, and you need to pick up the book, is that she has done it for you already. She went to China. You know, a lot of us wouldn't be able to afford going to China, but she did. She spoke to the best of the best. The book is called It's Not Rocket Science, 7 Game-Changing Traits for Achieving Uncommon Success. She did it all for us. So So all you have to do is pick up the book. The book is available wherever books are sold. You can buy it at Amazon and so forth. I would rather you come, obviously, to a Literary Jazz branch and pick it up there. But Mary, you continue to groundbreak and you continue to stress the realm of possibilities. And I would not want this time to go by without you telling us about your new company, Next Galaxy, and what the future holds for you as it relates to technology. I know that it's huge, but I'm going to let you share with our listeners what that is all about.
Oh, sure, definitely. So my new company, Next Galaxy, and you can visit, for more on nextgalaxy.co, nextgalaxy.co. We focus on what is the next media and computing platform, which is virtual reality. And basically, we're developing content for virtual reality. We're developing a platform which will make accessing virtual reality as simple as just turning on the TV. So you'll be able to take your mobile phone, download our app, and you're going to be able to be transported, teleported to a whole new different realm. And that's what we're focusing on. We also have the first 4D headphone, which allows you to hear more than you've ever heard. It also works with, the virtual reality platform. So if you want to know what virtual reality is or try it out, definitely visit us on seekers.com or nextgalaxy.co, and you'd be able to, you won't believe it. It's a very exciting, it's a new field. Everyone is, into it. Microsoft just released the HoloLens. Facebook just bought the Oculus. If you look at what tech is doing right now, this is what tech's doing. So it's a great opportunity for people to look into what it is and see how maybe they can apply, their skill set or their company or their passion to helping build the future.
And you're right there in the middle of the tech revolution. And I know that a lot of people are talking about you. You're the person they're watching in the tech field right now. People are saying that, I see it all the time in the huge magazines, Mary Spiegel. How does it feel? And how does it feel, they're just, you're the next Mark Zuckerberg or better, I'll say that. How does it feel, Mary? I mean, the truth of the matter is your story is mm-hmm. a remarkable one, coming from mm-hmm. Ghana at 16, not even seeing internet on your mm-hmm. own, so to speak, being put out of a church. Who puts a kid out of a church, And
right,
now,
right.
Look at you now.
And thank God, right? Speaking about putting somebody out of a church.
Puts a person out of a church?
right. It's like, yeah. I'm very thankful these amazing things happened to me, and I'm just so thankful. I feel very blessed to have experienced a lot of what I've experienced. I think that for me, it comes with a lot of responsibility because it is not enough for me to have an event, for example, in China or when I was in Mexico, and you have tens of thousands of people, show up, and you don't see that many girls in there, or you don't see that many people that look like me in there. And I think it's super important because our skills, our talents are needed and they're wanted. So I am thankful for being the mouthpiece and the fact that I get to do what I love. I'm just thankful. I'm just very thankful for all of this and what's happening, and I take it very, personally. And I will, 100 years old, I'll be evangelizing that this is, what we need to do is really empower our young girls and, others to do
right.
what they're fully capable of doing.
All right, you're going to just have to come to hear the rest from Mary because we're out of time, because I even want to ask her how you know, how do you know that these people will talk to you? But you can hear that from her. And our website is footprints-foundation.org, footprints-foundation.org, or our telephone number, 305-573-8423. It's our literary jazz brunch. It takes care of the work we do around the world. You're not going to hear us for a little while, but all of this will be archived, and you can come Saturday. Bring your friends, bring your kids. You know, it's a wonderful event. Call your other female business owners, and let's just be here. Let's be empowered. I know Mary has just a horrendous schedule, and I do want to tell you, Mary, that I thank you for jumping online with us here today, because we really wanted our people to hear a sense of, just get a taste of who you are. I know you're off to something, running off to something, but I do appreciate your taking the time to give us this interview, and I look forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Oh, thank you so much. I am delighted. I look forward to being there, and congratulations on a great jazz brunch, a fantastic location, the Ritz-Carlton. I can't wait to be there. Thank you.
Okay, my love. Be good. So we're out of here. That's Lorna Owens, Mary Spio, and I'll see you on Saturday. Bye.
Bye-bye.